As globalism transitions from global to local, we become vocal local, blocking the globalist agenda right where we are, in our towns, cities, counties, and states. And now, here is that nemesis of globalism, your host, William Roberts.
And the sun is rising over Missouri, folks, and it's time once again for a Show Me Showdown. We got breakfast on the table, coffee brewing on the stove, and there is a revolution in the air. Be a part of it, and welcome to our Tuesday, June the 9th, 2009, two-hour broadcast of Become Vocal Local, coming to you Monday through Friday here on the Oracle Broadcasting Network. That's oraclebroadcasting.com. Do check out the homepage of our website today. There's all kinds of interesting stuff for you there. I've also got a little website out there, vocallocal.org, www.vocallocal.org. Check out Plan B. Make sure you've read that. My name is William Roberts. I've got good news, certainly lots of that, hard facts indeed in there, and perhaps some workable solutions for you today. If you can't remember the last time you experienced the pursuit of happiness, then you're definitely in the right place at the right time to become vocal local as we all scratch our head and wonder what happened to that pursuit of happiness principle anyway. This is the home of philosophical radicalism, and we've got heaping loads full of that today. Freedom remains popular in America, and we're going to stay on that tack. Interactive Talk Radio is the name of the game, and to be a part of today's broadcast, you can sign in, pick a name, and become vocal local in the OracleBroadcasting.com chat room, or pick up the telephone, call throughout the broadcast for those with unlimited long-distance access or in the Austin, Texas area. You may call 512-904-8014 to join me live on air. And from around America and around the world, you can call in throughout the show at 866-841-1065, and your calls are welcome. You also send your ideas for guests, show topics, and news to me via email. I got a lot of nice emails yesterday. That was really fun, enjoyable. I always love to hear from you. Anyway, you can send your ideas for guests, show topics, and news to me via email at host@vocallocal.org. That's host@vocallocal.org, vocalis localis in Latin. And for those without internet access, listening by any of our affiliate stations and micro broadcasters, you too can be a part of it. Send your letters to me at William Roberts, Post Office Box 96, out of Exeter, Missouri, that little small town, America, Exeter, Missouri, 65647. That's the federal postal code. And a big shout out to Liberty Radio, Owensville, Micro, 1650 AM, Buffalo, New York, and 94.3 Elgin, Texas. Gentlemen, thank you for broadcasting Become Vocal Local to your local audiences. Always enjoy that. Again, our websites are vocallocal.org. There's another one out there, ozarksvoter.info. One more, freedomadvocates.org. You can go and visit all of those websites throughout the broadcast and in the days to come. Gold today and silver, they are beginning a long climb up after the steep fall that they took on Friday and Monday. Kind of got really hammered in the last 72 hours anyway. We're going to talk about that. Revolution and counter-revolution, public opinion, collectivism, much more. Economic Forum news, we're going to go there. Of course, we'll take your calls as well. So let's go into those market reports for Tuesday, June the 9th, 2009. Active trading out of New York City as of 9 o'clock a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Gold was up, and we say that, with tongue-in-cheek because it's way down, but gold was up $5.50, trading at $956.20. Finally back up over that 950 mark and seems to be moving up higher still. The silver market, silver was up 31 cents, trading at $15.20. Glad to see it above $15 again. We're heading for 16, hopefully. I'd sure like to see it go there. Platinum up $4, $1,246 a troy ounce. Palladium up $2 as well, trading at $251. The lows and the highs in the gold spot market so far today, $947 for a low. To give you an idea of the depth of the depression, $960.80, give you an idea for the spread there. We're looking at about $13, something like that. The London Gold Fix, the boys over in London set the fixing price at $952.50. We'll pick it up on the other side. Stay with us.
Howdy. My name is Chris Milligan, publisher of Trine Day Books. Thomas Jefferson said, information is the currency of democracy. Trine Day brings to you what some don't want you to read today. Dr. Mary's Monk is a book of profound importance. It helps us understand what has really happened in our country. Born to write this story, author Ed Haslam had met Dr. Mary Sherman, whose grisly murder mystery led him first to secret medical labs and then into the wilderlands of the Kennedy assassination. Author Jim Mars calls it an eye-opening ride into government cover-ups. Daniel Estulin's award-winning international bestseller, The True Story of the Bilderberg Group, was hailed by editors at a major New York publisher, but then stopped by higher-ups. After you read this book exposing the secret plans of the world's elite, you'll understand why. Trine Day books are available at bookstores everywhere or by calling 1-800-556-2012.
Of the 3 million-plus edible food plants that grow on Earth, no other single plant can compare with the nutritional value of the powder, seeds, and oil of the hemp plant. At HempUSA.org, we ship worldwide these nutritional products with free shipping to the U.S. and Canada. At HempUSA.org, we want to educate our listeners that edible hemp is not marijuana and is certified THC-free. Our powder is 50% protein and does not contain gluten. Gluten impairs the cells from absorbing nutrients. This nutrient-dense food can be stored up to 5 years when vacuum-packed and is priced affordably to be used as a storable food. HempUSA.org is a bulk shipper starting with 5 pounds and up. To allow this food to work for you, call 908-691-2608 or go to HempUSA.org and order today. The body will react and heal itself given the proper nutrition. This superfood will be your greatest asset. So try it today, store it today, and change your life. Call 908-691-2608 or order from HempUSA.org.
The First Amendment in the Bill of Rights limits the government's power by ensuring the freedom of speech and preserving the rights of the people. Every day that passes, our rights gradually slip away. It's time to take a stand and let the government know we're tired of losing our rights. LibertyStickers.com will allow you to express your rights and allow millions of people to see you stand up for what you believe in. LibertyStickers.com carries the largest selection of bumper stickers online, ranging from political to humorous, and is your number one source for Ron Paul for President stickers. As always, you can find your favorite stickers that protest the war and the president. Don't see what you're looking for? Liberty Stickers will custom make stickers that will let you get your message across for all Americans to see. Go to LibertyStickers.com and see pre-made stickers that will get everyone talking. That's LibertyStickers.com or call 877-873-9626. Liberty Stickers, the world's most dangerous stickers.
This is Become Vocal Local with your host, William Roberts.
And welcome back to our Tuesday, June the 9th, 2009, two-hour broadcast of Become Vocal Local. This is the Oracle Broadcasting Network. My name is William Roberts. In the opening segment of today's broadcast, we looked at the market reports. We see a little bit of recovery coming on in the precious metals. Gold was trading up $5.50 at $956.20. Silver was up 31 cents. Trading at 1520. In the stock market, we're looking at the Dow Jones closing yesterday up 1.36, trading at 87.65. The NASDAQ was off 7 points, 1,842. The S&P off almost a point, trading at 939. Crude oil, there's no real blessing in this. Crude oil was up $1.34 yesterday, trading at 69.43. Watch as it moves into the $70 range. I think it's going to go there. I think it might stay there all summer if the other analysts are right. They're saying somewhere between 70 and 80 bucks for the entire summer. Maybe we won't see $50 oil again. Anyway, the U.S. dollar index seems to be taking a little bit of a blow here, down about 35 basis points, trading at 80.37. That's still a bit of a rebound. That's kind of part of the problem that we were experiencing in the last few days in the gold and silver markets and the other markets, is the U.S. dollar index was going up and up in this little basket of currencies. Let's take a look at our basket of currencies for this morning. The foreign exchange rates. Canadian dollar up just a fuzzy bit, trading at 91 cents. The Mexican dollar up a little bit, noticeably, but still 8 cents. the euro, the dollar and 40 cents U.S., if you want to, these are all exchange rates. If you want to buy and sell wheat or gold or iron ore or things like that on an international level, you're going to have to go to these various baskets of currencies because your dollars are not going to be any good in Switzerland. The euro, up a dollar, it's up a little bit. It's 0.7152 is the multiplier, but it's standing at $1.40 U.S. The British pound, still very strong at $1.62, and the Swiss franc, 92 cents. So fill up your pockets with those Mexican pesos. You're going to get plenty of them at 8 cents apiece. The two-year bond, 1.32%. The 10-year bonds at 3.85. The 30-year bonds at 4.62. And if you understand the bond market, then you'll understand what that's all about. I can't say that I really understand the bond market, but it's out there. It exists. You know, we try and give you the financial news without any spin. Here's a little bit more financial news. Excuse me. The LIBOR. Now, we've talked about this LIBOR, the London Interbank Offered Rate, numerous times, got into lengthy articles as to explain it. Explaining all about the LIBOR, but the LIBOR spread spurs switch and loan benchmarks for U.S. borrowers. Now, when we talk about these percentile moves in these foreign exchange rates, even though the percentages are tiny, and to you and me, they seem like insignificant, why is this important? This article is going to give us a little idea of why the big guys pay attention and why we should also. June the 9th, Bloomberg article, Kristen Hans writes, U.S. power generating company cut its interest rate costs by about $6.25 million last quarter after taking advantage of an option that allows borrowers to peg loan rates to shorter maturity benchmarks. Key phrases, lots of words. The company saved about one percentage point by linking the interest on $2.5 billion of debt to the one-month London Interbank Offered Rate, that's the LIBOR, instead of the three-month LIBOR at the end of last year. The difference between the two has averaged 0.69 percentage point this year. But again, you know, 0.69 percentage point. What are you talking about? You're all worried about these small things. Well, $6.25 million savings. You see, you take these little points and add them up, and pretty soon you get to some real money. Anyway, let's continue. The difference between the two has averaged 0.69 percentage points this year compared with about 0.07 percentage points this decade. And you see the huge jump from 0.07, less than 1%, to 0.69. That's a big jump. Gobbing a bunch there. Until the credit markets began to freeze 2 years ago, the gap equates to $690,000 in a year in interest on every $100 million borrowed. Now, I know you haven't borrowed $100 million lately. I haven't borrowed $100 million lately either. But for those that are out there that do, it does add up to some real money. $690,000 a year on interest savings on every $100 million borrowed. The spread was huge, Ted Babcock said, the vice president for finance and investor relations at the New York-based electricity supplier, in a May the 22nd interview. Reducing interest costs is one way to prop up profits in a year when earnings for members of the Standard & Poor's 500 index may drop 16%, according to data compiled by Bloomberg. Blah, blah, blah. Anyway, very important to understand whenever we see or hear this word prop up, that's just code for sustainable development, because actually sustainable development is exactly that. It's to prop up, it's to shore up, or to sustain something that would ordinarily fall and collapse on its own. So continuing along here, Suddenlink Communications and at least 17 other companies are tying interest payments to the one-month LIBOR, said an investor with knowledge of loan terms who declined to be named because the details haven't been made public. Dropping down a little further in this article, Lehman bankruptcy, the wider spread for LIBOR, the benchmark rate for 360 trillion of financial products ranging from consumer mortgages to corporate bonds, is part of the fallout from the September collapse of the Lehman Brothers Holding, Inc. Credit marks seized up after the firm filed for the biggest bankruptcy in history, because financial institutions didn't know which would survive after the more than $1 trillion of losses and write-downs. And, of course, you probably don't have $1 trillion in your checking account, and I certainly haven't that much in mine. LIBOR peaked in October when the one-month rate reached 4.59%, and three-month rate climbed to 4.82%. Again, you know, there's small amounts, 459 versus 482, but it's huge when you start adding up the bucks. Anyway, that's all we really needed to find out about that. LIBOR, that's what it's all about. For the big guys, it's important. For us, we just need to take note of it. There's a lot happening today and yesterday over in St. Petersburg, Russia. The World Economic Forum is in day two here. Actually, this is older news. It may already be over. Let's see what it is. Let's see what this article says. I pulled this off of RussiaToday.com. Now, maybe that we've got some news hounds on the network that can get in there and really find the nuts and bolts, some of the juicy tidbits that may have come out of this economic forum. I was not able to find that today. But I only started in on it a little bit late. I remembered all of a sudden that this economic forum was happening, reported on it last week. But here's a news article off of RussiaToday.com. This is off June 6th, so it's not quite new news. Delegates from more than 70 countries have been gathering in St. Petersburg, that would be Russia, Mother Russia, for a major economic forum to help define the world's post-crisis financial architecture. The post-crisis financial architecture. Established in 1997, the annual conference is dubbed the Russian Davos. And we'll find out more about that on the other side. Stay with us.
How would you like to cook any meal using no electricity or gas and cook your meals off the grid? Well, now you can, thanks to the Survival Oven. The Survival Oven is the most amazing off-grid solar oven that can cook anything that a conventional oven can without the energy bills. By condensing sunlight, the Survival Oven can produce temps up to 350 degrees, cook delicious and nutritious meals, sterilize water, dehydrate food, and so much more, all at zero operating costs. The Survival Oven can be used year-round, even in the coldest sub-zero temperatures, and is a must for emergency preparedness and even everyday use. Visit SurvivalOven.com to get your very own Survival Oven. Order the Survival Oven now, and we'll get you started with two cooking pots and a recipe booklet absolutely free. At less than 10 pounds, you can take Survival Solar Oven with you anywhere. Call 877-642-1553 or go to SurvivalOven.com. That's SurvivalOven.com.
Loan modifications don't work, at least not without some leverage from a forensic audit by mortgage fraud examiners. Have your payments skyrocketed under an adjustable rate mortgage? Have you been laid off or had your hours cut? Are balloon payments coming due? Congress and the White House are pinning their hopes on homeowners renegotiating their mortgages to stop the housing crisis. Trouble is, the banks are saying no 80% of the time. That's where Mortgage Fraud Examiners comes in. They perform forensic loan audits and appraisals to find legal deficits in your mortgage. They estimate that up to 85% of all mortgages have legal problems. Banks and lenders suddenly start cooperating if faced with a lawsuit for violating lending laws or appraisal fraud. You could gain some powerful ammunition to use for Mortgage Fraud Examiners. Get more information at www.mortgagefraudexaminers.com or call 800-540-EXAM. That's 800-540-3926.
Aerial spray, chemtrails, the modified atmosphere, heavy metals and pesticides, carcinogens and chemical fibers all falling from the sky. You have a choice to keep your body clean. Detoxify with microplant powder from hempusa.org or call 908-691-2608. It's odorless and tasteless and used in any liquid or food. Protect your family now with microplant powder. Cleaning out heavy metals, parasites, and toxins. Order it now for daily intake and stock it now for long-term storage. Visit hempusa.org or call 908-691-2608 today.
Now, we've returned once again. We're going into this little report off of RussiaToday.com in regards to the St. Petersburg World Economic Forum. Of course, many of you know, and we're going to get to a little bit of that today, that we've been studying out of this textbook, this college textbook on history, World Civilizations by Edward McNall Burns. And in this book, this textbook, 1,083 pages, I'm so close to finishing it, I wanted to stay up late last night and just tag this one and call it a day. But I didn't. I decided to get some sleep. Anyway, nonetheless, within about 100 pages of the completion, very, very interesting course on world history that would have been fun, absolutely fabulous to have been able to attend class, maybe even by the author. Would have been a great privilege and a pleasure. But nevertheless, he carries several threads with him throughout this entire textbook, and when he gets into the various and sundry wars and revolutions and so on and so forth throughout history, he always likes to bring in the economic causes. There are several causes, immediate causes and less than immediate causes of all of the various big things that have happened, but he always draws in these economic and social and political and theological threads into the discussion, which makes it fascinating for a subject that could otherwise be dreadfully boring. However, nonetheless, economics plays a big role in all of this, and certainly economics played a big, big role as we went into World War I and its carry-on, World War II, and then Korea and the rest of it. Mess. Anywho, let's go back to this article and pick it up, because we're going to find out that there has been, for a long time, this great antagonism between collectivism and individualism, or collectivism and nationalism. And so we find, and we could expect to find in this article from the St. Petersburg World Economic Forum, information that points back to that. And this is what they said. Today's main event of the forum was the address of Russia's Minister of Finance and First Deputy Prime Minister Alexei Kudrin on the future of the post-crisis world financial architecture. Now, if you remember from our coverage of the G20 summit, the news articles that were coming out of there was that it was time to rediscover or reinvent capitalism. Well, we're looking at this redevelopment of capitalism as being one of the fundamental threads throughout all of the last couple of hundreds of years, ever since the rise of mercantilism, etc. But let's continue with the article. For a number, Russia's finance minister has called for the International Monetary Fund, and of course we studied that one in our inquiry into the origin, history, and the purposes of the new economic order. Those series are all up on the archives. But Russia's finance minister has called for the International Monetary Fund, in other words, known as the IMF, and some people say World Bank, to be reformed and for other world financial institutions to adapt to the changing economic situation. For a number of years, I would love to have been a fly at the wall during this economic forum. Maybe we'll get a report from someone like Joan Vian or something. Anyway, for a number of years, the Kremlin has been saying that the existing financial system is prone to crisis, because it is distorted in favor of the U.S. and its partners. Therefore, it needs to be more balanced and transparent, as well as serving the interests of all the major players. We must seriously and boldly raise the issue of turning the IMF into a proper representative of key world economies, and power should be redistributed in proportion to the size and importance of those national economies. There is no such thing at the moment. For now, the U.S. is represented by 15% of votes, and China's participation is less than that of some of the EU members, such as Switzerland or Belgium, Kudrin said. Now, if you recall, as we went through the development of the IMF, what we discovered was that each of the various powers pledged or committed and got their voting shares based upon a percentile. They pledged and committed currencies in gold based upon a percentile of their gross domestic product, and this was back right after the Bretton Woods conference. And so they were assigned voting rights. They had so many votes. And so here what this article is intimating is that that has not been kept up, that's not been updated over time, apparently. Because I'll just say it again. There is no such thing at the moment. For now, the U.S. is represented by 15% of votes, and China's participation is less than that of some of the EU members, such as Switzerland or Belgium. So some of these various countries around the world, and including the United States, as our GDP continues to get down lower and lower, our generally dumb public becomes more and more bigger numbers. Anyway, long story short, don't need to go there. What we're hearing is a clamor for a redistribution of voting powers inside of these monetary funds. Continuing, another interesting discussion on the future of reserve currencies tops the agenda as well. So this idea of the United States dollar as the reserve currency of the world is being revisited. Discussion on the future of reserve currencies. The topic of new reserve currencies is a favorite of Moscow's. President Dmitry Medvedev mentioned it in his speech on Friday, saying the world needs more reserve currencies to diminish the dominance of the U.S. dollar. Medvedev said the risk of making the world dependent on the microeconomic situation of just one country are obvious. The new things are in the offing. You can rest assured of that. And the U.S. dollar is in deep peril. The Russian president also noted that Russia, Mother Russia, would like to see the Russian ruble as a regional reserve currency for the post-Soviet space, and Moscow has already come out with a strategy of how to achieve that. Russian officials are talking about pricing Russia's prime export commodities, such as oil, gas, and grain, in Russian rubles, thus forcing buying partners to stock the Russian currency. On another event, the World Grain Forum is opening in St. Petersburg, and this is the first time that this event is being held in Russia, and it has been timed to coincide with the St. Petersburg Economic Forum, and this reflects the growing importance of grain as a Russian export commodity. Now, again, when we cover the foreign exchange rates every day, folks, this is the reason why we're doing it. To understand that there's a lot more than this national prejudice and national hatred and intense nationalistic jingoism that we get out of the public media, the private controlled media, if you will, in this country. It's just one view of a much greater global situation, and there are a lot of countries around the world that have long sharpened their knives against the United States and Great Britain, the Anglo-American affair, if you will. And so, there may be some equitable changes coming in the future, which won't bode well for us. Russia has repeatedly voiced its intentions to diversify its economy away from oil and gas to different commodities. And grain is certainly one of them. And if you listen to the YouTube clip from, I think, Jimmy Rogers the other day, played on one of the networks, he's talking about looking at the various commodities, you know. Let's get real here. You know, gold and silver and grain and rice and cotton and other things are going to take the day in this new century. And those that get involved in those and those that get invested in them are going to be, ahead of the game. And it looks to me here as this article is unfolding from the St. Petersburg World Economic Forum, that they're talking grain as well. Continuing, this year, Russia has actually broken its own record of selling abroad about 20 million metric tons of grain to over 50 countries, most of which are represented at the St. Petersburg Economic Forum. Plans of creating a grain cartel similar to OPEC, which would regulate grain prices, maintain quality, and set export policies, are going to be discussed in St. Petersburg, too. So you can see these grain cartel, you know, every day we report the price of crude oil. That's the OPEC bunch. We want these guys getting together with their turbans and rubles and discussing the price of bread for this month globally. I don't think that's a good idea. We'll be right back.
You are now listening to the Oracle Broadcasting Network, the home of cutting-edge talk radio.
Hey, folks, I've got a question for you. Do you force yourself out of bed each morning and drag throughout the day? Do you grab for that sugar pick-me-up only to later crash and feel even more tired? Well, I've got the solution for you. Put a zip in your day and zap your appetite. Reclaim your get-up-and-go with Zip and Zap. Let me tell you what you'll notice in immediate benefits. It ramps up your workouts. Well, if you work out. Turns off your hunger, elevates your mood, helps you to resist fattening foods, and gives you a smooth flow of energy with no crash. The testimonials? Colin in Illinois lost 30 pounds in 8 weeks, didn't work out. Susie in Missouri, 10 pounds in 20 days, she didn't work out. Anna in California did work out and went from a size 14 to a size 4 in 90 days. If you want results like this, working out or not, order Zip and Zap now and also ask about Lametco International's first line of defense products. Tell him Michael Herzog sent you. Call 1-800-933-2565. That's 1-800-933-2565.
You invest. You buy insurance. You wear your seatbelt. You do things to ensure your family's future and protection. But why? Just in case? With the current state of affairs, ask yourself, am I ready? Preparation starts at SurvivalGearSource.com. SurvivalGearSource.com has a huge selection of vital products, emergency survival kits, gas masks, MREs, products for pet care, your car, home, office, and school. Protect against pandemics, all natural disasters, and terror attacks that can happen at any time. If you're not prepared, the last place you want to be is standing in a FEMA line. Invest in your future now. Visit SurvivalGearSource.com or call 877-231-1925. That's 877-231-1925. SurvivalGearSource.com. That's SurvivalGearSource.com. 877-231-1925. SurvivalGearSource.com. Prepare for tomorrow now, and for a free gift on your first order, enter coupon code ORACLE at checkout. Don't forget, preparation starts at SurvivalGearSource.com.
Now on DVD, my newest documentary film, The Secret Rite, Volume 1. I'm Josh Reeves, and for the almost 2 years, I have researched the secretive right-wing group known as the Council for National Policy. This film explores for the first time the hidden hand that controls the religious and military aims of the American right wing, with such topics as Iran-Contra, the John Birch Society, eugenics, the Vatican controllers, Christian Zionists, the Bohemian Grove, the Patriot Movement, and more. More powerful than the Council on Foreign Relations, more secretive than the Bilderberg Group, The Secret Rite Volume 1 goes where no other film has dared to go. Get your copy today at SecretRightMovie.com. That's www.SecretRightMovie.com. And find out what you haven't been told about the New World Order.
We're going into the press today. We've taken our topics before. We're going to do it again.
This is Become Vocal Local with your host, William Roberts.
And we're back and closing out this economic news for today on this article from the St. Petersburg World Economic Forum published on RussiaToday.com. Russia has ambitions to climb to the second position in the world as the world's largest grain exporter after the U.S. taking over Canada and the EU, and many experts believe that there is every reason to believe that this is possible. Kind of a clumsy way of saying it, but, you know, we'll give the Russians the benefit of the doubt there. Meanwhile, as the world's largest country, Russia still lags behind due to its outdated agricultural infrastructure, preventing the country from producing much more grain than it potentially could. And that's important, and very important to understand, especially when you think back of, Hitler's eyes on Russia. One of the main reasons that he was looking there was for all the natural resources, and he visualized it as being the breadbasket of the world. And so the Russians, after all these years, are finally starting to get into that position. But, as more and more acres are taken out of grains and wheat and things like that in the United States of America, and more acres are planted to the genetically modified corn for the production of ethanol, it's the starvation of the people. We're going to see that it's maybe very possible that Russia will eclipse everybody and become the sellers of bread globally. We'll see. Anyway, let's go on into things a little bit further. We've been talking about revolution and counter-revolution, public opinion, collectivism, and so on. And this is, we're going to continue right now. And before we get deep into the revolution and counter-revolution, there was mention in the chat room, wouldn't it be great to be able to take a history course somewhere where you could actually get true history as opposed to the massaged history that is so often put out even in the Ivy League schools. And so here's a couple of real brief excerpts out of this textbook, World Civilizations, and I've been very much enjoying reading this book. But at the same time, you always have to have your discernment antenna all the way up because you're not given the truth, even by some of the most credible researchers. And certainly Mr. Burns did a great job weaving together 6,500 years of history. But let's go into this a little bit. Even after the adoption of a Republican Constitution in 1875, the victory of democracy in France, throughout this entire text, you know, he uses this word liberally, but we'll give him that. The victory of democracy in France was by no means complete. For some years, the Republic, you see how we switch it back and forth again, for some years, the Republic had to struggle with the reactionary elements determined to restore some form of autocratic rule. Between 1887 and 1889, it was faced with a dangerous crisis in the Boulanger episode. Georges Boulanger was a general in the army and a former minister of war who developed Napoleonic ambitions, revolutions and counter-revolutions. Here we have the Boulangers. Appealing to the injured pride of the patriotic Frenchmen, that's playing on that nationalistic fervor again, nationalist prejudices and national hatreds. He won enthusiastic applause by clamoring for a war of revenge or revanche against Germany. By harping on scandals recently exposed in the Republican regime, he endeared himself to the monarchists and also to conservative Catholics who hated the Republic for its anti-clerical programs. Okay? Hated the Republic for its anti-clerical programs. Soon he was the most popular man in France, and everywhere mobs clamored for their brave general under the illusion that a new Bonaparte had risen in their midst. Flattered and emboldened by this adulation, Boulanger determined that upon a national plebiscite as a more tangible proof of the people's support. He stood for election to the Chamber of Deputies in every available district and won by substantial margins 10 times in 6 months. In January of 1889, he crowned his exploits by rolling up a triumphant majority in radical Paris. These philosophical radicals are everywhere. It seemed now that nothing could stop him from riding into power as a military dictator, but fortunately for the Republic, this god, little g god, who had been worshipped by the rabble and by the ladies in the salons, we've talked about those salons, that's not hair salons, turned out to have feet of clay. When the government finally mustered enough courage to order his arrest on charges of conspiracy, he fled ingloriously to Belgium, and 2 years later, he blew his brains out on the grave of his mistress. Well, that's interesting. A very interesting little article about the Boulanger episode. Now, why do we study all of this history, and why would we go to these textbooks, and where would we go from here? Well, the first place to go from here, of course, would be into the encyclopedias, because from the encyclopedias you could study out each of these various aspects covered in that lengthy paragraph. And from there, then, you can go into the footnotes, and from the footnotes provided by this particular author into the footnotes in the various encyclopedias. And then you can go into the actual texts that have been written about this and get yourself a wide understanding, a broad understanding from many different points of reference as to what was actually happening at this particular juncture in 1887 and 1889. Now let's continue. Because this little paragraph, the next one, is extremely important, and yes, it's almost dismissed by the author. All right? Important. The ignominious collapse of the Boulangist movement did not end the attempts to discredit the Republic. In the 1890s, the reactionaries adopted anti-Semitism as a spearhead for the advancement of their aims. the fact that certain Jewish bankers had recently been involved in scandalous dealings with politicians lent color to the monarchist charge that the government was shot through with corruption and that money-grabbing Jews were largely to blame. Now, folks, this is a university textbook. You would never be able to publish that kind of a sentence today. The ADL would be all over them. I mean, no way. You can't say things like that. I'll just repeat it. The fact that certain Jewish bankers had recently been involved in scandalous dealings with politicians lent color to the monarchist charge that the government was shot through with corruption and that money-grabbing Jews were largely to blame. Catholics were persuaded to believe that Jewish politicians had dictated the anti-clerical legislation of the Republican regime. With such charges befouling the air, it is not strange that anti-Semitism should have flared into a violent outbreak. In 1894, this is very important, do listen carefully. In 1894, a Jewish captain of artillery, Alfred Dreyfus, do we see a show of hands for all who have ever heard of Alfred Dreyfus or the Dreyfus Affair? Alfred Dreyfus was accused by a clique of monarchist officers of selling military secrets to Germany. You know, the sort of stuff that happens every day in America where the Israelis sell secrets. Or presidents just give secrets to the Israelis. But anyway, he was accused by a clique of monarchist officers of selling military secrets to Germany. Tried by a court-martial, Alfred Dreyfus was convicted and sentenced for life to Devil's Island. At first, the verdict was accepted as the merited punishment of a traitor. But in 1897, Colonel Descartes, a new head of the Intelligence Division, announced his conclusion that the documents upon which Dreyfus had been convicted were forgeries. A movement for a new trial was launched, which the War Department promptly refused. Soon, the whole nation was divided into friends and opponents of the luckless captain. On the side of Dreyfus were the radical Republicans, the socialists, people of liberal and humanitarian sympathies, and such prominent literary figures as Emile Zola, there's a piece of work, and Anatole France. The anti-Dreyfus swords included the monarchists, the clerical, the Jew-baiters, the militarists, and a considerable number of conservative working men and sincere but mistaken patriots. Dreyfus was finally set free by executive order in 1899, and 6 years later he was cleared of all guilt by the Supreme Court and restored to the army. He was immediately promoted to the rank of major and decorated with the emblem of the Legion of Honor. The outcome of the Dreyfus Affair effectively squelched the monarchist movement in France. Since then, its adherents have been gradually reduced to political insignificance, a mere handful of old nuts rattling in a bag. In other words, these monarchists reduced to nothing more than a mere handful of old nuts rattling in a bag. As already intimated, the Dreyfus Affair was an element in a broader struggle over the issues of church and state. We'll have to pick up that church and state argument on the other side as we begin to see the beginnings of modern Zionism.
Would you like to finally be debt-free without paying another cent to creditors and not have to file bankruptcy? DebtCrisisSolutions.com can help free you from the debt trap. This is not a debt settlement program which has tax consequences or debt consolidation. With our program, there are no more payments to creditors or collectors. We will help restore your credit history, protect your property, prevent paycheck garnishments, and preserve your bank account. We also provide mortgage modification services which can lower your mortgage payments without refinancing. If you're facing foreclosure or are in the foreclosure process, we can help. Finally, proven debt solutions that work for the people. Become debt-free in 90 days. Doing nothing doesn't make the debt go away. Call Debt Crisis Solutions today and speak to an advisor absolutely free. Call 718-615-0123. That's 718-615-0123. Or visit them online at debtcrisissolutions.com. That's debtcrisissolutions.com today.
Are you one of the people who think, I have plenty of time, nothing's ever going to happen bad to me? Do you believe that when your cupboards are bare, our corporate-controlled government will jump right in to feed you and yours? Do you have at least a year's supply of food for your family? This is Kurt, the armchair survivalist, heard on this network. Survival Enterprises sells real food, canned for long-term storage. Beef, chicken, turkey, bacon, butter, cheese, eggs, freeze-dried fruits and vegetables, Mountain House freeze-dried meals, MREs, a full nutritional line, the British Birkfeld water filter, and more. If you want to prepare now, go to beforeitstoolate.us. That's beforeitstoolate.us. Or call 1-800-753-1981. That's 1-800-753-1981. Or you can put your head in the sand and be just another sheeple in the corporate-controlled flock. But remember, those who don't learn from history are bound to repeat it.
PureBulk.com has more than 120 nutritional products, super antioxidants, amino acids, and herbal extracts, including advanced life extension nutrition. Find great products like atomic iodine, oil of oregano, spirulina algae, niacin, performance amino acids, herbal extracts, skincare, and heart health nutrition. PureBulk.com products have no fillers, no additives, no hype, and no fancy retail packaging. Just the highest quality bulk nutrition at wholesale pricing. You can also save 50 to 90% off retail nutritional prices when buying bulk wholesale powders and capsules. Shop securely online at purebulk.com or call 406-251-3270. That number again, 406-251-3270. Use the coupon code iodine and receive a 1 gram atomic iodine sample with any order. That's a 150-day RDA supply of atomic iodine absolutely free. Find out more online at purebulk.com.
All right, we've returned once again right here on Become Vocal Local on our Tuesday, June the 9th broadcast. Going into this little bit here, the Dreyfus Affair out of our university textbook. And we can see in this discussion here, as the author has styled it, and this is quite accurate generally, that what we have here is a classic example of opinion and cross-currents of public opinion. Public opinion, as they influence and shape law, brought Dreyfus into prison, sentenced for life. And cross-currents of public opinion, railing against the unfairness of this trial, and then the discovery of forged documents, which set him free, and then led to his restoration to the military, promotion to a major and decorated with the emblem of the Legion of Honor. This is the classic example of opinion, public opinion, and cross currents of public opinion as they shape law, legislation, and the various incidents that unfold around us throughout life. But we need to also understand that this Dreyfus Affair, if you're not aware of it, it's this Dreyfus Affair that then led through the work of Theodore Herzl and Lord Balfour and Chaim Weizmann and Stephen Weiss and the Rothschilds to the creation of that illegitimate little box of rocks known as Israel. Whether on the on the west coast of the Dead Sea and on the east coast of the Club Med. Anywho, long stories and shorts and all of that, there's a lot to study right there. But it also brings up a very important tension and counter-tension, revolutions and counter-revolutions going on between the Catholics and the Jews. And of course, you need to understand that all throughout the rule and reign of the Holy Catholic Church, that especially in France, being a Catholic wasn't an option. And so no matter where you were from, and certainly for those that would have a profession of Jewish faith, they needed to be a Catholic during the daytime. They could, light the menorah at night, but read the Torah and the Tanakh, but they were going to have to be Catholics during the daytime. And that there's another thread running all through this. If you go back and pick it up with Shabtai Zvi, this is Shabtai Zevi, sometimes in the encyclopedias, it's Z-E-V-I, the Shabtaians, after he was considered to be a prophet in his day for the Jews, and after he was arrested and imprisoned, I believe, in Turkey, where he died, his disciple, Jacob Frank, fled off to Austria and became a house pet of Maria Theresa, I think, of the queen or the lady, the grand dame of Austria, and then became the founder of what is known as Francus, or the Francus. And the Francus, the Catholic Church is shot through with Francus, and in the various pews and so on and so forth. I've heard that I don't know it for sure because I've never sat down to supper with the gentleman and asked him, but I believe that it was John Kerry is a Francist. Those that are Catholic outwardly and Jewish inwardly, etc. So there's that whole thing going on. Then there's the Zionism and, all that. Then altogether, too often we fail to understand that when Gamaliel began starting up the Jewish religion, Judaism, which is an ism, it's a faith, not a race, that we have ever since then been visited with this contrast between calling someone a Jew and mistaking Judaism for Jewishness in all of that, as if there was some kind of a race that you could follow up there. Go all the way back to whom? All the way back to that Yahwist cult that we found in our studies, sheep herders, goat herders, or whatever they were, that Yahwist cult that then eventually became the Habiru, the people from the other side, which then conquered through various genocidal wars the area known as Palestine, and then finally conquered Salem, which became Jerusalem. But it wasn't until their destruction and dispersal that Judaism per se starts to really turn up in history beyond the influence of the Babylonians and the Jewish Talmud and things like that. Anyhow, long stories, lots of stuff in there, so much to study and so much to read. Let's go into, but let's not forget who Theodore Herzl is and the importance of Richard Dreyfuss. Now we can go over here and return once again to A.V. Dicey's lectures on public opinion, law and public opinion in England during the 19th century. And this series of lectures were delivered here on the East Coast in the Ivy Leagues. I think it was all at Harvard. And we find in this lecture number 12 the relation between legislative opinion and general public opinion. And he begins this way. I can see we're almost out of time on this segment. Lawmaking opinion is merely one part of the whole body of ideas and beliefs which prevail at a given time. Lawmaking opinion. So, we hear all the time, well, our voice doesn't matter, blah, blah, blah. You can't change City Hall and so on. And no one's going to be listening to me and so on. But lawmaking opinion is merely one part of the whole body of ideas and beliefs which prevail at a given time. And certainly the lobbyists, the big sponsors, have the ability through their voice, their collective voice, expressed with a check in support of the various political adventures of Barry and the Boys and Jorge Bush and company. Public opinion has an impact on law and policy and the general operation of governments. We therefore, the author continues, this is A.V. Dicey, Albert Venn Dicey. He then continues, he says, we therefore naturally expect first that alterations in the opinion which governs the province of legislation will reappear in other spheres of thought and action and be traceable in the lives of individuals, and next, that the changes of legislative opinion will turn out to be the result of the general tendencies of English or indeed of European thought during a particular age. And then he continues, he says, this lecture is an attempt to show that these anticipations hold good in a very special manner of that transition from individualistic liberalism to unsystematic collectivism or socialism, which has characterized the development of English law during the latter part of the 19th century, in other words, the 1800s. Takes us right back to the Communist Manifesto, Revolution and Counter-Revolution, our articles here from the encyclopedias and the other things we've been studying. But see, there's this antagonism that is built up between individualistic liberalism into unsystematic collectivism or just socialism in the latter part of the 19th century. And this then starts us into this area, this time period, which we then go into with Russia and Germany and France and England and Austria, all striving and grasping for power. Germany was eclipsing the great British Empire, rising as a new star on the European continent, coming into control of economic aspects of things. You know, where were the Rothschilds from? Frankfurt am Main. Originally, Meyer Amschel hung up his little red shield there, you know. And so the monetary powers began to rise there. We've been all through this rise of mercantilism into the industrial and the commercial revolution, the industrial revolution and on. And this idea of collectivism or socialism is coming right along with it. It's concurrent right along with that. Largely because the early capitalists and the bourgeoisie, those entrepreneurs, really just ground what used to be the serfs under their foot with as much fervor as any other despots did. And so the people, the proletariat, rebelled. They raised up against that. They wanted a piece of the action. They could see that if one class, the bourgeoisie, could rise up, they could see the possibility or the potential that they could rise up, but then they truly were the sovereigns. Not their elder brother, the merchant, if you will. And so, we'll get into this in greater detail in the next hour and cover more of our material from the Communist Manifesto, Revolution, Counter-Revolution, and the Encyclopedia of the Social Sciences, the article titled Revolution and Counter-Revolution. So stay with us as we begin the second hour. We'll be right back.
Howdy. My name is Chris Milligan, publisher of Trine Day Books. Thomas Jefferson said, information is the currency of democracy. Trine Day brings you what some don't want you to read today. Dr. Mary's Monk is a book of profound importance. It helps us understand what has really happened in our country. Born to write this story, author Ed Haslam had met Dr. Mary Sherman, whose grisly murder mystery led him first to secret medical labs and then into the wilderlands of the Kennedy assassination. Author Jim Mars calls it an eye-opening ride into government cover-ups. Daniel Estulin's award-winning international bestseller, The True Story of the Bilderberg Group, was hailed by editors at a major New York publisher, but then stopped by higher-ups. After you read this book exposing the secret plans of the world's elite, you'll understand why. Trine Day books are available at bookstores everywhere or by calling 1-800-556-2012.
Of the 3 million-plus edible food plants that grow on Earth, no other single plant can compare with the nutritional value of the powder, seeds, and oil of the hemp plant. At HempUSA.org, we ship worldwide these nutritional products with free shipping to the U.S. and Canada. At HempUSA.org, we want to educate our listeners that edible hemp is not marijuana and is certified THC-free. Our powder is 50% protein and does not contain gluten. Gluten impairs the cells from absorbing nutrients. This nutrient-dense food can be stored up to 5 years when vacuum-packed and is priced affordably to be used as a storable food. HempUSA.org is a bulk shipper starting with 5 pounds and up. To allow this food to work for you, call 908-691-2608 or go to HempUSA.org and order today. The body will react and heal itself given the proper nutrition. This superfood will be your greatest asset. So try it today, store it today, and change your life. Call 908-691-2608 or order from HempUSA.org.
You are now listening to the Oracle Broadcasting Network, the home of cutting-edge talk radio.
As globalism transitions from global to local, we become vocal local, blocking the globalist agenda right where we are, in our towns, cities, counties, and states. And now, here is that nemesis of globalism, your host, William Roberts.
And welcome back to our Tuesday, June the 9th, 2009, to our broadcast to become vocal local, coming to you Monday through Friday on the Oracle Broadcasting Network, oraclebroadcasting.com. Give out those call-in numbers again. It's in the Austin, Texas area. You can call 512-904-8014 to join us live on air and internationally around America and around the world. You can call in at 866-841-1065. And your calls are welcome. It's our little internet homeschool classroom, I like to think of it. We've got a lot of material to cover today in the beginning of the broadcast. In the first hour on the archives, you'll be able to find the market reports for today and a little bit of news covering the Economic Forum over in St. Petersburg, Russia, etc. And now we're starting back into our study of the counter-revolution, revolution and counter-revolution. Is very important to understand. So we get involved in this nationalistic jingoism so often where all of the focus is on, you know, the American Revolution, the tricorn hat, mourners' benches, 50 caliber, black powder rifles, etc., and so on. But we're really involved with something much bigger than that. We were almost isolationists, and virtually were, throughout a lot of the rise of statism in Europe and through much of the various and sundry struggles, and we were latecomers in both worldwide War One and Two, latecomers and all of that. But it was after World War II that we really got our legs and we came out the world superpower, not only economically, but militarily. But of course, Mother Russia that Adolf Hitler had in his sights plays a big role in all of that too, because they are still the world's largest country. Anyway, if you look at the map, you'll see what I mean. So we're going into this idea of public opinion and cross currents of public opinion as they shape law and legislation, because public opinion really has far more power than the average man understands. And we've become this new pluralistic society made up of hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of these various and sundry little splinter groups, from the Save the Whale to the Tree Hugger to green this and green that, every different kind of a club, a group, all of the animal clubs, all of the fraternities, you know. There's so many out there. That's not even taken into consideration all of the hundreds and hundreds of splinter groups in Christianity. You know, the Reformation, like I say, you know, it drove a wooden hub right into the heart of Christendom because it was, you know, basically out to get the Catholic Church, which up until that time was the only Christian church, really, other than perhaps a couple of inconsequential tiny little fragments. But anyhow, long stories and short stories. When we think about the home of philosophical radicalism, we're getting into some of the real philosophical radicals as we proceed our study, and this is going to be no exception. Continuing back to our text here from Albert Van Dicey. Again, this is Law and Public Opinion. These are lectures that were given back in the early 1900s by Albert Van Dicey. I believe this was originally published in London by Macmillan Publishers in 1917. But let's see if I can get it quickly of what years these. Albert Van, 1905 when he was 70. See, he published his second edition, so it was right about in that time. 1914s or thereabouts, he came over to the United States and he gave a series here. See, maybe this is it. Yeah, see if I can find it. I should find this and put a bookmark on it. In 1911, blah, blah, blah. Well, I don't see it right off the bat. Forget about it. Sometime in the late 1800s, early 1900s, he came over to the United States and he began a series of lectures. And that's what we're working out of here, this series of lectures to live to the legal minds in America. We'll be right back.
First Amendment in the Bill of Rights limits the government's power by ensuring freedom of speech and preserving the rights of the people. Every day that passes, our rights gradually slip away. It's time to take a stand and let the government know we're tired of losing our rights. LibertyStickers.com will allow you to express your rights and allow millions of people to see you stand up for what you believe in. LibertyStickers.com carries the largest selection of bumper stickers online, ranging from political to humorous, and is your number one source for Ron Paul for President stickers. As always, you can find your favorite stickers that protest the war and the president. Don't see what you're looking for? Liberty Stickers will custom make stickers that will let you get your message across for all Americans to see. Go to LibertyStickers.com and see pre-made stickers that will get everyone talking. That's LibertyStickers.com or call 877-873-9626. Liberty Stickers, the world's most dangerous stickers.
How would you like to cook any meal using no electricity or gas and cook your meals off the grid? Well, now you can, thanks to the Survival Oven. The Survival Oven is the most amazing off-grid solar oven that can cook anything that a conventional oven can without the energy bills. By condensing sunlight, the Survival Oven can produce temps up to 350 degrees, cook delicious and nutritious meals, sterilize water, dehydrate food, and so much more, all at zero operating costs. The Survival Oven can be used year-round, even in the coldest sub-zero temperatures, and is a must for emergency preparedness and even everyday use. Visit SurvivalOven.com to get your very own Survival Oven. Order the Survival Oven now, and we'll get you started with two cooking pots and a recipe booklet absolutely free. At less than 10 pounds, you can take Survival Solar Oven with you anywhere. Call 877-642-1553 or go to SurvivalOven.com. That's SurvivalOven.com.
Loan modifications don't work. At least not without some leverage from a forensic audit by mortgage fraud examiners. Have your payments skyrocketed under an adjustable rate mortgage? Have you been laid off or had your hours cut? Are balloon payments coming due? Congress and the White House are pinning their hopes on homeowners renegotiating their mortgages to stop the housing crisis. Trouble is, the banks are saying no 80% of the time. That's where Mortgage Fraud Examiners comes in. They perform forensic loan audits and appraisals to find legal deficits in your mortgage. They estimate that up to 85% of all mortgages have legal problems. Banks and lenders suddenly start cooperating if faced with a lawsuit for violating lending laws or appraisal fraud. You could gain some powerful ammunition to use for Mortgage Fraud Examiners. Get more information at www.mortgagefraudexaminers.com or call 800-540-EXAM. That's 800-540-3926.
This is Become Vocal Local with your host, William Roberts.
All right, we're back right again here on our Tuesday, June the 9th broadcast of Become Vocal Local. We're looking at this Albert Van Dyke. You know, this sounds probably pretty dry to you, but let me just get into it. I finally found it during the break, the preface to the first edition. It's buried many pages in, but he says this. In 1898, I accepted an invitation to deliver to the students of Harvard Law School a short course of lectures on the history of English law during the last century. It occurred to me that this duty might be best performed by tracing out the relation during the last 100 years between the progress of English law and the course of public opinion in England. This treatment of my subject possessed two recommendations that enabled me to survey the law of England as a whole without an attempt to go through the whole of the law, and it opened, as I hope, to my hearers, a novel and interesting view of modern legislation, a mass of irregular, fragmentary, ill-expressed, and, as it might seem, illogical or purposeless enactments. gains a new meaning and obtains a kind of consistency when seen to be the work of a permanent currents of public opinion. And so we can look at this a mass of irregular, fragmentary, ill-expressed, and might seeming illogical or purposeless enactments of law in America, and look back to this 1898 time period when these lectures were delivered, to get an idea that what he was advancing was spot on, and it's still operative today. And he then continues, he says, the form of these lectures has been studiously preserved in his book, so that my readers may not forget that my book pretends to be nothing but a course of lectures, and that a lecture must, from its very nature, present a mere outline of the topic with which it deals. As you can imagine, if you get up in front of a crowd in a lecture hall, you can't go into all of the details, the nuts and bolts of everything. You can just go where you can go in an hour or 2 hours that you have. And so it ought to be the explanation and the illustration of a few elementary principles underlying some subject of interest. And so that's why I use this text on air, because it is a kind of a series of lectures that we do here every day on Become Vocal Local, trying to bring out from some of the many, many books in my library, the things that I've studied, pertinent pieces and details of information, as Doug Owen likes to say, providing the backstory to some of this insanity that we see going on around us, and we can start to understand that there's nothing new under the sun, and that we are basically just revisiting all of these old paths, these tried and true paths that have been used upon the people by the controllers or the priest class, as Lee Rogers likes to say, over these past 6,500 years, which we've been reviewing. Nothing much new about any of this. But because of the deficiency of the educational system in the United States of America and around the world in the post-UNESCO era, it is helpful to dig in and do a little bit of research and connect some of these dots so we get a better understanding of where we are, who we are, and whose we are. But let us continue again here from his writings. This is again Lecture 12. I'm pointing right at these philosophical radicals now, and we've got lots of other material that we can go to in the future on this. But and he says, as to the analogous changes of opinion in different spheres, and also in the lives of individuals, this is a new section, let us here consider rather more fully a matter several times touched upon in the foregoing lectures, namely the relation between legislative and theological opinion. Between legislative and theological opinion. And in our text here from world history, when the Dreyfus Affair, we can see this conflict of opinion between the Semites and the Catholics in France. And understand that Albert Van Dicey here occupied the Vaccinian chair, which was created and established for William Blackstone, and it was, of course, Sir William Blackstone's commentaries on the laws of England that so much ruled the day here in the colonies when our system of government was established. So he's carrying on in that capacity at Oxford, and here in a series of lectures in Harvard. Now, by 1870, however, it was manifest that Benthamism and Evangelicalism had each lost much of their hold upon English men. Now, what is Benthamism? We've learned in our studies here that we have to be very careful and run up our antennas whenever we come across these various isms. We started studying anarchy and tracked it all the way up to the point where it switched from anarch to anarchism, and became a belief system in the modern worlds. And so he's contrasting here Benthamism and evangelicalism. We hear about the Council for National Policy. We hear about all the various evangelicals. But we can also see here now, Mr. Dicey is telling us that by 1870, it was manifest that Benthamism, who is Bentham, we're going to cover him, and evangelicalism had each lost much of their hold upon English men. And this decline of authority, when once it became noticeable, was rapid. In England of today, in the England of today, again, this is 100 years ago, the very names of Benthamites and of evangelicals are forgotten. Their watchwords are out of date. many ideas, it is true, which we really owe to Bentham and his followers, or to Simeon and his predecessors, exert more power than would be suspected from the current language of the time. See, there are things that are running in the background. When you look at the face of a watch, it doesn't reveal much except the time and maybe the manufacturer. But if you open up the watch and look inside, you'll see the clockwork, if you will. There's a lot more going on in the background than you might be aware. Their watchwords are out of date. Many ideas, it is true, which we really owe to Bentham and his followers, or to Simeon, repeating, and his predecessors, exert more power than would be suspected from the current language of the time. But as living movements, Benthamism and evangelicalism are things of the past. Have they no real interconnection or similarity? To this question, many critics will reply with a decided negative. It appears at first sight a hopeless paradox to contend that the doctrines of Jeremy Bentham, there's the name now, and James Mill had any affinity with the faith of Simeon or Wilberforce or of Zachary Macaulay. The political reformers were radicals, or, in the language of their day, Democrats. I'll say that again. The political reformers were radicals, capital R, radicals, or in the language of their day, Democrats. They were certainly free thinkers, and must sometimes, in the eye of evangelicals, have appeared infidels, if not atheists. They assuredly attached no value to any theological creed whatever. Their only conception of church reform was to make the Church of England a fit instrument for the propagation of utilitarian morality. The evangelical leaders, on the other hand, were Tories, Whigs and the Tories, conservatives and liberals, Democrats and Republicans, click, click, tick, tock. Been going on a while. We'll pick up with those Whigs, those Tories, those evangelicals, and those philosophical radicalisms on the other side of this break. Stay with us.
Aerial spray, chemtrails, the modified atmosphere, heavy metals and pesticides, carcinogens and chemical fibers all falling from the sky. You have a choice to keep your body clean. Detoxify with microplant powder from hempusa.org or call 908-691-2608. It's odorless and tasteless and used in any liquid or food. Protect your family now with microplant powder. Cleaning out heavy metals, parasites, and toxins. Order it now for daily intake and stock it now for long-term storage. Visit hempusa.org or call 908-691-2608 today.
Hey folks, I've got a question for you. Do you force yourself out of bed each morning and drag throughout the day? Do you grab for that sugar pick-me-up only to later crash and feel even more tired? Well, I've got the solution for you. Put a zip in your day and zap your appetite. Reclaim your get-up-and-go with Zippin' Zap. Let me tell you what you'll notice in immediate benefits. It ramps up your workouts. Well, if you work out. Turns off your hunger, elevates your mood, helps you to resist fattening foods, and gives you a smooth flow of energy with no crash. The testimonials? Colin in Illinois lost 30 pounds in 8 weeks, didn't work out. Susie in Missouri, 10 pounds in 20 days, she didn't work out. Anna in California did work out and went from a size 14 to a size 4 in 90 days. If you want results like this, working out or not, order Zip and Zap now and also ask about Lametco International's first line of defense products. Tell them Michael Herzog sent you. Call 1-800-933-2565. That's 1-800-933-2565.
You invest. You buy insurance. You wear your seatbelt. You do things to ensure your family's future and protection. But why? Just in case? with the current state of affairs, ask yourself, am I ready? Preparation starts at SurvivalGearSource.com. SurvivalGearSource.com has a huge selection of vital products, emergency survival kits, gas masks, MREs, products for pet care, your car, home, office, and school. Protect against pandemics, all natural disasters, and terror attacks that can happen at any time. If you're not prepared, the last place you want to be is standing in a FEMA line. Invest in your future now. Visit SurvivalGearSource.com or call 877-231-1925. That's 877-231-1925. SurvivalGearSource.com. That's SurvivalGearSource.com. 877-231-1925. SurvivalGearSource.com. Prepare for tomorrow now, and for a free gift on your first order, enter coupon code ORACLE at checkout. Don't forget, preparation starts at SurvivalGearSource.com.
And we're back once again, diving into this text a little bit deeper, penetrating in behind the veil, if you will, going back into history and trying to find certain roots in all of these various and sundry directions. We find the doctrines of Jeremy Bentham and James Mill kind of being contrast with Simeon Wilberforce and Macaulay. Political reformers were radicals. That would be Bentham and the various philosophical radicals of his time. But in the language of their day, they were known as Democrats. They were certainly free thinkers. In the eyes of the evangelicals, they appeared to be infidels, if not atheists. And they assuredly attached no value to any theological creed whatever. And their only conception of church reform was to make the Church of England a fit instrument for the propagation of utilitarian morality. The evangelical leaders, on the other hand, were Tories. They were men of ardent personal piety. To Bentham and his followers, they must have seemed like bigots. Their efforts were directed to the revival throughout the nation of religious fervor. The only kind of church reform which enlisted their sympathy was the removal of all abuses such as pluralism. My, oh my. Pluralism. Which hindered the Church of England from being the effective preacher of what they held to be saving truth. Evangelicalism, in short, with its gaze constantly directed towards the happiness or terrors of a future life, the pursuit of happiness principle, might well be considered the direct antithesis of utilitarianism, which looked exclusively to the promotion in this world of the greatest happiness of the greatest number. Of the greatest happiness of the greatest number. If you can't remember the last time you experienced the pursuit of happiness, then you're in the right place at the right time to become vocal, local. You see, it took me a long time to figure this little thread out. From the Declaration of Independence, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. What is this idea? The direct antithesis of utilitarianism. The evangelical leaders, the Tories, the monarchs, the established church, the crown and parliament assembled, as opposed to these political radicals, these political reformers, these radicals, in the language of their day, were Democrats. Now, curious, is it not? So many of these staunch patriots out there in the patriot community, you know, Republicans, radical red Republicans, they don't seem to understand what it all means to be part of the radical red Republican Party of Lincoln, a communist front group from the beginning. Nevertheless, the Republicans, Tories, the established Church of England, Episcopalian, perhaps. Catholic, maybe. Questioning, though, because at the same time, they advanced the writings of Adam Smith, The Wealth of Nations, Locke, and all of these various and sundry others, but it's kind of a blurring. As we like to say on this broadcast, what was conservative yesterday has become liberal today. What was liberal yesterday was conservative then. So the whole idea of the left-right continuum in political discourse is ridiculous. It has to be grounded in time, and we've talked about time on this broadcast also. understanding what an illusion it actually is. Continuing, their efforts again were directed to the revival throughout the nation of religious fervor. We hear a lot of that. Railing on against the homosexuals and everything else, you know. There's a lot to that. But nevertheless, we need to understand the philosophies that underlie it, the backstory here. So let's continue. Evangelicalism, in short, with its gaze constantly directed towards the happiness or the terrors of a future life. This goes back through our study where we went into the Middle Ages or the Dark Ages because everyone's eye was on life after death, foregoing and forgetting about the life that they were actually living, looking forward to future rewards rather than finding their rewards on the planet. It was a sort of fatalism that damn near killed everything. That's what they call the Dark Ages. Anyway, it's like putting yourself in a box. It's like when the box of this Oriental despotism was fastened down upon the people. Everybody's eyes were on the ground right in front of their hoe as their elbows were pumping in, and they were hoeing another couple of miles of beans each day for the lords and the priest class. The difference here, the direct antithesis of utilitarianism, which looked exclusively to the promotion in this world of the greatest happiness of the greatest number. The difference is nothing else than the gulf which severs religion from secularism. Now perhaps we can understand why so many of the patriots, so to speak, always say life, liberty, and property, looking at John Locke and foregoing our founder's wisdom, who were looking at life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness as Benthamism and James Mill and all these people were coming up through the writings of Francis Hutcheson and others. They were the Democrats, not the Republicans, so it's very convenient to misdirect and point in a new direction. If you're actually going to pursue the greatest happiness of the greatest number, if you're going to follow the happiness principle, then you're going to need to look in new directions. The difference is nothing else than the gulf which severs religion from secularism. Secularism is the religious versus the temporal versus the secular. Yet, as we can see now, Benthamism and evangelicalism represented the development in widely different spheres of the same fundamental principle, namely the principle of individualism. All of these isms makes your head swim. So we'll continue a little bit further on that. The appeal of evangelicals to personal religion corresponds with the appeal of the Benthamite liberals to individual energy. Indifference to the authority of the church is the counterpart of indifference to the authoritative teaching or guidance of the state or society. Indifference to the authority of the church is the counterpart of indifference to the authoritative teaching or guidance of the state or society. A low estimate of ecclesiastical tradition, aversion to and incapacity for inquiries into the growth or development of religion, the stern condemnation of even the slightest endeavor to apply the Bible to the Bible, the principles of historical criticism bear a close resemblance to Bentham's contempt for legal antiquarianism and to James Mill's absolute blindness to the force of historical objections brought by Macaulay against the logical dogmatism embodied in Mill's essays on government. Evangelicals and Benthamites alike were incapable of applying the historical method and neither recognized its value nor foresaw its influence. The theology, again, which insisted upon personal responsibility and treated each man as himself, bound to work out his own salvation, had an obvious affinity to the political philosophy which regards men almost exclusively as separate individuals and made it the aim of law to secure for every person freedom to work out his own happiness. And what more could we ask from law and government than to secure for every person the freedom to work out our own happiness? Do you actually need someone else to come along and tell you what happy is? How ludicrous. And so we can see there, again, we have these currents of opinion and cross-currents of opinion in the rise of the Benthamite utilitarianism as contradicted to the evangelical right of today. We'll be back on the other side and continue counter-revolution and revolution. Stay with us.
You are now listening to the Oracle Broadcasting Network, the home of cutting-edge talk radio.
Now on DVD, my newest documentary film, The Secret Rite, Volume 1. I'm Josh Reeves, and for the almost 2 years, I have researched the secretive right-wing group known as the Council for National Policy. This film explores for the first time the hidden hand that controls the religious and military aims of the American right wing, with such topics as Iran-Contra, the John Birch Society, eugenics, the Vatican controllers, Christian Zionists, the Bohemian Grove, the Patriot Movement, and more. More powerful than the Council on Foreign Relations, more secretive than the Bilderberg Group, The Secret Rite Volume 1 goes where no other film has dared to go. Get your copy today at secretrightmovie.com. That's www.secretrightmovie.com. And find out what you haven't been told about the New World Order.
How would you like to finally be debt-free without paying another cent to creditors and not have to file bankruptcy? DebtCrisisSolutions.com can help free you from the debt trap. This is not a debt settlement program which has tax consequences or debt consolidation. With our program, there are no more payments to creditors or collectors. We will help restore your credit history, protect your property, prevent paycheck garnishments, and preserve your bank account. We also provide mortgage modification services which can lower your mortgage payments without refinancing. If you're facing foreclosure or are in the foreclosure process, we can help. Finally, proven debt solutions that work for the people. Become debt-free in 90 days. Doing nothing doesn't make the debt go away. Call Debt Crisis Solutions today and speak to an advisor. Absolutely free. Call 718-615-0123. That's 718-615-0123. Or visit them online at DebtCrisisSolutions.com. That's DebtCrisisSolutions.com today.
Are you one of the people who think, I have plenty of time, nothing's ever going to happen bad to me? Do you believe that when your cupboards are bare, our corporate-controlled government will jump right in to feed you and yours? Do you have at least a year's supply of food for your family? This is Kurt, the armchair survivalist, heard on this network. Survival Enterprises sells real food, canned for long-term storage. Beef, chicken, turkey, bacon, butter, cheese, eggs, freeze-dried fruits and vegetables, Mountain House freeze-dried meals, MREs, a full nutritional line, the British Birkfeld water filter, and more. If you want to prepare now, go to beforeitstoolate.us. That's beforeitstoolate.us. Or call 1-800-753-1981. That's 1-800-753-1981. Or you can put your head in the sand and be just another sheeple in the corporate-controlled flock. But remember, those who don't learn from history are bound to repeat it.
This is Become Vocal Local with your host, William Roberts.
And we're back once again. I see we're going to want to move away from this text a little bit and go back to our encyclopedia study. But before we do, this idea of happiness is very important. And it was, and I have to credit the writings here of Dicey for really putting me on this hunt. Because it was not until I had read this book by Albert Van Dicey, these lectures on law, that it really came to mind. It came, it's fully developed in this book. And from there, I went on and done a lot of other research in regards to just what was in our founders' minds when they wrote the words, pursuit of happiness, and included that in the Declaration of Independence. If these are the founding documents that this country was built upon or based upon, if this was the philosophical radicalism of the day, then we should certainly understand that. But I would just basically challenge anybody to provide the archives of the broadcast of any of the patriots out there talking about the pursuit of happiness. I would certainly like to listen to their analysis. So far, I'm left to my own devices on this, but I hope you can understand that there's a big, big deal here. There's a big issue here. And also, let's understand this transition from individualism into collectivism, that there is a long series of links. There's many links in this chain. And it was out of the works of the Benthamites, the utilitarians, that we started getting socialism, where they were trying initially to have individualism. There's a lot to this. And we'll come back and we'll study with Mr. Dicey and find out more about the evangelicals and where they were trying to go. But let's close with this. Evangelical teachers and philosophical radicals, now we're including them, they urged their disciples, this is a collective statement, evangelical teachers and philosophical radicals urged their disciples, though in very different ways, to lead better and nobler lives. They appealed as regards matters of national concern to the public spirit and to the humanity of Englishmen. They excited among all whom they could influence the hatred of palpable injustice and felt themselves and kindled among others a special abhorrence for that kind of oppression which manifestly increased human suffering. So I guess before we throw stones at any group, we need to understand that for a long time, many people on both sides of all of these various arguments, these various parties and factions, they were all looking pretty much at the same thing that I'm looking for, which is where we as people move into the future, into this 21st century, into greater and greater measures of freedom and less of this despotic and tyrannical control. And you're not going to find that kind of freedom from a one-world global GIS-GPS governance system. It's just not going to happen. If you feel as though you're being suppressed or oppressed in that kind of a system, to whom would you raise your appeal? To whom would you voice or appeal for redress of grievance? Well, I can tell you that we'll be wasting your time. So, let's go back into revolution and counter-revolution and get a little bit more out of this. And the last moments, let's see, I've got some other stuff here. Do I want to go there first? Let's go there first. Out of the appendices of Germany, Revolution and Counter-Revolution by Frederick Engels, I'd opened up a specific section in the appendices. It says, in London, as to a lesser degree in Switzerland, freedom of association and of public meeting was of inestimable advantage to them in their activities. On February the 7th of 1840, the German Workers' Educational Society was founded. This was not an underground organization, but functional in the full light of day. At the time of writing, and this would be 1885, it is still in existence. The society served as a recruiting ground for the Federation, and since the communists were the most active and the most intelligent members of the society, as always, they took it as a matter of course that the leadership of the society should be in the hands of the Federation. Very soon, the Federation could boast of several communes, or as they were called then, huts, in London. Here, as in Switzerland and elsewhere, tactics were dictated by circumstances. Wherever workers' associations could be formed, they were made use of in much the same way. Where legal prohibitions prevented such methods, the organizations took the form of choral societies, gymnastic societies, and the like. Communications were kept up mainly by a continuous flow of traveling members, fellow travelers, going to and fro among the groups. Where necessary, these traveling members functioned as emissaries. In either case, the activities of the Federation was greatly furthered by the governments of the day, which, in their wisdom, by exiling every workman who had earned their disfavor, and in 9 cases out of 10 such a worker was a member of the Federation, it converted him into an emissary. These reading societies, reading circles, the idea of exiling people for their political views, all of the emigres that were vacuumed up out of Europe between the World War I and the roll-up to World War II, who found themselves here in the United States. And so many of them were tailors, yes. Even tailors, let's see if I can find that. If I can find that right quickly here. Let's see. Well, it's not there, but yes, many of them were tailors. They're people in the rag trade, so on and so forth. Anyhow, a whole bunch of shaking was going on. But we had those like Hannah Arendt, Jacques Maritain, Leo Strauss, and others that came to the United States to explain to the United States what Europe was all about, and then, of course, to explain what America was all about to the Americans. And then we have people like William and Irving Kristol, and Paul Wolfowitz, and all of Richard Perle, and the others that made up Jorge Bush's cabinet, largely the disciples of Leo Strauss, neocons. Continuing here, let's talk about a little bit more out of the encyclopedia. Upper class participation in revolution is facilitated again by the fact that the revolutionists themselves are divided into moderates and radicals. When a revolutionary outbreak occurs, the ruling group grants many demands for which a long and vigorous but futile struggle has been previously waged. The psychological value of these victories is not as great as that of far less important concessions won by peaceful methods, for the occurrence of a revolution and the apparently weak resistance with which it meets raises the hopes and expectations of the revolutionary stratum. But the practical influence of such achievements can scarcely be overestimated, since they lead to a division in the revolutionary camp previously united in the fight against the common enemy. And so we talk about the efficacy of remaining unjoined, if you will, functioning as individuals, as opposed necessarily to joining on to these groups, because these groups inevitably become infiltrated. And then they are simply divided and become a divided camp. But it is even from their own ranks that these ideologies come up in different ways, which then fragment the groups. We have gotten to the point mentally where there are no two Americans that can agree on any half dozen items without getting into a brawl. And this has been inculcated. When you get into the idea of diversity, multiculturalism, well, you know, the idea, who was it, advanced it, do as thou wilt, for it's the whole of the law, Aleister Crowley, the Crowleyites and all of that, sex, drugs, and rock and roll, everybody has doing their own thing. That's all about division. That's all about breaking up the national interest of the country and reducing it down to this fragmented collectivist mentality. It's so difficult because, you know, individualism is itself an ism. Collectivism is itself an ism. But a custom, a tongue, a tribe, and a creed where all of our laws come together. When you start to talk about nations as opposed to countries and states, nations implies a much broader brush. It brings in social and cultural aspects of all of this. But dropping down a little bit further in this lengthy article, let's pick it up right here. The growth of the right wing of the moderate party signifies ipso facto an increase in the strength of reactionary groups not included in the government bloc and paves the way for counter-revolution.
PureBulk.com has more than 120 nutritional products, super antioxidants, amino acids, and herbal extracts, including advanced life extension nutrition. Find great products like atomic iodine, oil of oregano, spirulina algae, niacin, performance amino acids, herbal extracts, skin care, and heart health nutrition. PureBulk.com products have no fillers, no additives, no hype, and no fancy retail packaging. Just the highest quality bulk nutrition at wholesale pricing. You can also save 50 to 90% off retail nutritional prices when buying bulk wholesale powders and capsules. Shop securely online at purebulk.com or call 406-251-3270. That number again, 406-251-3270. Use the coupon code iodine and receive a 1 gram atomic iodine sample with any order. That's a 150-day RDA supply of atomic iodine absolutely free. Find out more online at purebulk.com.
Howdy. My name is Chris Milligan, publisher of Trine Day Books. Thomas Jefferson said, information is the currency of democracy. Trine Day brings to you what some don't want you to read today. Dr. Mary's Monk is a book of profound importance that helps us understand what has really happened in our country. Born to write this story, author Ed Haslam had met Dr. Mary Sherman, whose grisly murder mystery led him first to secret medical labs and then into the wilderlands of the Kennedy assassination. Author Jim Mars calls it an eye-opening ride into government cover-ups. Daniel Estulin's award-winning international bestseller, The True Story of the Bilderberg Group, was hailed by editors at a major New York publisher, but then stopped by higher-ups. After you read this book exposing the secret plans of the world's elite, you'll understand why. Trine Day books are available at bookstores everywhere or by calling 1-800-556-2012.
Of the 3 million plus edible food plants that grow on Earth, no other single plant can compare with the nutritional value of the powder, seeds, and oil of the hemp plant. At hempusa.org, we ship worldwide these nutritional products with free shipping to the U.S. and Canada. At hempusa.org, we want to educate our listeners that edible hemp is not marijuana and is certified THC-free. Our powder is 50% protein and does not contain gluten. Gluten impairs the cells from absorbing nutrients. This nutrient-dense food can be stored up to 5 years when vacuum-packed and is priced affordably to be used as a storable food. HempUSA.org is a bulk shipper starting with 5 pounds and up. To allow this food to work for you, call 908-691-2608 or go to HempUSA.org and order today. The body will react and heal itself given the proper nutrition. This superfood will be your greatest asset. So try it today, store it today, and change your life. Call 908-691-2608 or order from hempusa.org.
Okay, so we're back into the complexity here of this idea of revolution and counter-revolution, trying to understand, you know, because we're right in the middle of this. There is a revolution in the air. And whether you like it or whether you don't like it, you're going to be a part of it. Things are happening. Things are changing. And so we see that we can split ourselves up in this right and left, conservative, evangelical, this, philosophical, radical, that, right, left, Republican, Democrat, but also there's this upper class, and then there's the bourgeois, there's the proletariat, the elitists, the middle class, the proletariat, but the upper classes are in trouble. Here from our article, it says, furthermore, the upper class is not habituated to protecting itself by its own efforts, for in normal times this duty devolves upon the police and the courts. But when the old guardians of law and order are replaced by the agencies of the revolutionary mass, the upper class is left exposed and must seek to protect itself. They know that. Any of them having been to college and studied along these lines, they're well aware of that. They can sense that exposure. And so even though they may not be for tasering and beating and extended stays at Club Med someplace with pliers on genitals and things like that, although they would maybe perhaps find that repulsive on any other day, they're seeing that as the way that they might be protected in the coming decades throughout the balance of their lives. For the revolutionary mass, We're going to drop down here. We're talking about the divisions in the camps now. For the revolutionary mass is never a homogeneous group. It consists of a large number of groups and subgroups, some of which, even before the revolution, were not far removed from the level of complete social emancipation, which, while others still have a long ways to go. So you've got some people out there, let's say like the descendants of the Negroes, African Americans, as some like to say, or blacks. They've had a large measure of emancipation, and so they may be a little bit reluctant to, you know, champion rights for the next bunch of minorities, because when they do, it challenges their status as the minority du jour. Continuing, in general, the closer a social group is to its goal, the less likely it is to undertake revolutionary action, and the more eagerly it will exploit a revolution for its exclusive benefit. So you might say, well, we have this evangelical movement, and they feel as though they've got quite a following, and there's lots of church members supporting their causes, and so on and so forth. In other words, they're close to their goal. Then the less likely it is for them to undertake any revolutionary action, and the more eagerly they will exploit a revolution for its exclusive benefit. Yeah, boys, you fight. Yeah, boys, you fight. Yeah, boys, you fight. We're not going to fight. No, you fight. You fight because we know that when the system is all upside down and inside out, that we're so close to our goal right now. You fight, and then we can get what we want. We've taken over governments before. We can do it again. Phyllis Schlafly said, you fight. So dropping down, after the first concessions have been gained, the groups which have thereby achieved emancipation, the bourgeoisie proper, and in a proper bourgeois revolution, the labor bureaucracy and the proletarian elite in a proletarian revolution tend to withdraw from the revolutionary struggle and to constitute themselves a new party of law and order. As the proletariat, as the workers' parties take over GM with a controlling interest in the company. The split between those who have had enough of revolution and those who would continue it leads necessarily to a programmatic and practical rapprochement between the moderate revolutionists and the pre-revolutionary conservatives. The groups whose interests are represented by the moderates are now forced to shift their position. They discard their general anti-government attitude and develop a sympathetic understanding of the benefits of peace, order, and authority. We saw a lot of this shifting of position, crossing of the aisle, in the middle of the last Republican term, wherein was 2006, that the people spoke and the Democrats took a majority in the House, rendering impotent, or at least somewhat impotent, the Republicans. And now we have a complete reversal. Now we have the Democrats in power. But we can see that the groups whose interests are represented by the moderates are now forced to shift their position. They're shifting their positions. And so those who would call for impeachment and so on and so forth during the primaries and the campaigns swap. The leopard changes its spots. Now dropping down again further. Again, the fundamental practical problem with counter-revolution, which counter-revolution must seek to solve, arises from the fact that the groups which stand to benefit by it are too weak numerically to carry it through by their own unaided efforts. So we have this one revolution happening, this revolution of the new world order, where they now have an ascendancy. And we have this counter-revolution coming along. But we always are faced with this problem that we must seek to solve, the fact that the groups which stand to benefit are too weak numerically to carry it through by their own unaided efforts, especially since the revolution has deprived them of much of the prestige and social influence which they may have enjoyed under the old regime. But as history has shown, those who are outspoken in demanding restoration aristocratic emigres during and after the French Revolution, the Russian anti-Soviet White Guard organizations, the monarchist unions and officers' leagues in Germany after 1918, those who are outspoken in demanding restoration, they do not succeed in enlisting popular support. So often I say the restoration of a constitutionally limited republican form of representative government, demanding restoration in that. But we find ourselves not very well supported. We don't succeed in enlisting popular support. Let's find out more about why that is. To fulfill its historic mission, reaction must become plebiscian or plebeian. It must devise a program appealing to those elements which in their social background and outlook are but remotely related to the central group of original counter-revolutionists. All these words. But do go back and listen to the archives and see if you can find any sense in your semblance. These volunteers in a cause essentially alien to their interests must be kept ignorant of the fact that they are organized and directed by reaction. Otherwise, they will not join or refuse to act after they have been recruited. That was a very, very long paragraph. I broke it up into two or three parts to read it. But it's very telling in that it points to this idea of reaction, some of what we're dealing with now. It talks a lot about why we are not having any success in the things that we're trying to do here, largely because we don't really understand the dynamic, the social implications of what it is that we're doing. And we'll come back and read that again on another broadcast. Difficult though it is, the practical problem confronting counter-revolution is not insoluble. In the period of preparation for a decisive struggle between reaction and radicalism, under the government of the moderates, the former ruling class is still in possession of considerable economic and political resources, and we see that today. The influence of wealth, authority, tradition, reputation, and personal connections does not evaporate overnight in a revolutionary uprising. And by such means, reaction succeeds in winning the support of those elements which never had a strong attachment to the revolution and did not expect much from it. While they may have been affected by the enthusiasm evoked by its early victories because these were immediately beneficial to their interests, they are vigorously opposed to any attempts to carry the revolution further. So some will walk with you a quarter mile when the journey is a mile long, and some will walk with you to the end. On the other side, the author writes, reaction makes an appeal to the disillusioned revolutionists, those to whom the revolution seemed to promise a great deal, who fought its heaviest battles and who thus far gained very little or nothing at all. There's a lot in all of this if we wanted to go back and dissect the Ron Paul campaign. There's a revolution in the air, the Ron Paul revolution. And we could look at all of these various and sundry parts and pieces and we might learn something from that study. Something that perhaps another campaign in the future would benefit by knowing. Anyway, that's it for today. I hope you've enjoyed the lesson, if you will. You'll come back again tomorrow. Until the next time, good day.
Taking it back, one precinct, one county, one state at a time. You've been listening to Become Vocal Local.
The First Amendment in the Bill of Rights limits the government's power by ensuring the freedom of speech and preserving the rights of the people. Every day that passes, our rights gradually slip away. It's time to take a stand and let the government know we're tired of losing our rights. LibertyStickers.com will allow you to express your rights and allow millions of people to see you stand up for what you believe in. LibertyStickers.com carries the largest selection of bumper stickers online, ranging from political to humorous, and is your number one source for Ron Paul for President stickers. As always, you can find your favorite stickers that protest the war and the president. Don't see what you're looking for? Liberty Stickers will custom make stickers that will let you get your message across for all Americans to see. Go to LibertyStickers.com and see pre-made stickers that will get everyone talking. That's LibertyStickers.com or call 877-873-9626. Liberty Stickers, the world's most dangerous stickers.
How would you like to cook any meal using no electricity or gas and cook your meals off the grid? Well, now you can, thanks to the Survival Oven. The Survival Oven is the most amazing off-grid solar oven that can cook anything that a conventional oven can without the energy bills. By condensing sunlight, the Survival Oven can produce temps up to 350 degrees, cook delicious and nutritious meals, sterilize water, dehydrate food, and so much more, all at zero operating costs. The Survival Oven can be used year-round, even in the coldest sub-zero temperatures, and is a must for emergency preparedness and even everyday use. Visit SurvivalOven.com to get your very own Survival Oven. Order the Survival Oven now, and we'll get you started with two cooking pots and a recipe booklet absolutely free. At less than 10 pounds, you can take Survival Solar Oven with you anywhere. Call 877-642-1553 or go to SurvivalOven.com. That's SurvivalOven.com.
As America limps on its last legs, a pillar of truth has risen. You're listening to the Oracle Broadcasting Network.